was there.
Both of them, the president and the vice president.
I was there.
CBTU has had years of foresight with this stuff. If they just start listening to us early.
Yes.
Okay.
So much better off.
Okay, ding, ding, ding. Ding, ding, ding. It's at closing time now.
So the Coalition of Black Trade, we meet the second Tuesday of every month at 6 p.m. And since the coronavirus, we have suspended face-to-face meetings and we're utilizing Google Meet to conduct our meeting. And, you know, of course, our next meeting will be March the 9th. So,
actually, Sister Girl, the next meeting is going to be April 13.
April 13th,
yep,
Madam President?
Yep. April 13.
And you can contact us through our email address at orcbtu10@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, so join us in our ever-evolving adventure of representing Black union workers.
All right, members and future members, thank you for listening.
Reverend Melvin, again, thank you for helping East meet West. You take care now.
All right. I always enjoy the conversation with you ladies. I always enjoy it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, with that, I'm going to sign off saying, holla. Okay, guys.
Thank you, Reverend. It was great.
All right. Thank you, ladies. You have a great rest of the day. It's still afternoon for y'all, but...
Yeah,
it's 6:30
something
here.
Oh, you got 15
minutes
for the next meeting. Yeah, you're
right. Thank you for the time.
Appreciate
y'all.
Okay, bye-bye.
Tell your wife hello.
Will do. Will do, definitely.
All right,
bye-bye.
So, Deborah.
Yeah.
I left you a voicemail.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
This is Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. In March 2021, the Family Preservation Project, who helps connect incarcerated mothers with their children at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, joined with Dream Corps Justice to convene Oregon's Day of Empathy. We'll hear from speakers from the event, including Oregon legislators and women who share their experiences about mothering behind the walls. They'll discuss bills now before the Oregon legislature that impact incarcerated mothers and their children.
First up is Representative Sanchez and Kendra Wright, who's also going to speak to these issues.
State Representative Tana Sanchez, House District 43 North and Northeast Portland. This bill, House Bill 3096, of course, came about after a lot of conversations, mostly just about how women are dealing with prison or treated in prison and how, you know, the different things that maybe are traumatic from obviously lots of different perspectives, but it is just the whole idea of women being different than men. I think that's really the biggest piece, and trying to understand how the system was designed not for women, not understanding the perspective of what it's like to be a mom or what it's like to be either female or in whatever, you know, spectrum you are there, but just how we've engaged this system from a very male controlling perspective and how maybe that affects women in particular around issues like domestic violence and sexual assault and all of those types of things. So this bill hopefully will put us towards in a place where we can look at from a larger perspective, somebody kind of viewing from the maybe an outside, it's obviously third party kind of thing, to really say, like, how does this need to be done differently? What pieces can we put into play to make things happen a little bit differently in a women's prison? This is the one, you know, women's prison that we have in the entire state. I don't think it's a huge lift. I think it's something we can actually truly make happen and support people, you know, when, unfortunately, when they might have to be there in prison. How do we just do that a little bit differently so that it really recognizes that we're talking about something different than a man's prison, that the same types of things don't need to happen there? In particular, what I was just hearing earlier, when it comes to kids, that's such a huge, huge issue around children and how they interact with this system and how the entire system has been so, so hard on them.
Kendra is a mom and a passionate advocate for reform in all aspects of criminal justice. Thank you so much for speaking to these issues.
Something that I think is important to understand is that motherhood is often weaponized in our criminal legal system, especially the way in which we criminalize maternal poverty. I came to prison broken. Just 2 months after arriving, a judge agreed with DHS's recommendation to terminate my parental rights. Prison is not set up to support women through these situations. After the termination, I was brought back to the prison and went back to my job and normal prison life. I'd reached out for help through what DOC has to offer, which is a behavioral health program. And although the intention is good, it's the only thing that was available was medications, not therapy or trauma healing programs or the things that I actually needed. So there I was, not given the opportunity to make amends for the crimes that brought me to prison. I had just lost my parental rights, and yet almost daily I had to have pat downs or strip searches, you know, just typical prison, you know, rules and things that you deal with on a daily. And the strip searches took away what little bit of dignity I had left. A good friend of mine told me about Jessica Katz and the Family Preservation Project, and that's when my life changed. Through their support, I managed to fight for visits and phone calls. I had been appealing my termination, and so through that, DHS had restricted and limited my contact with my daughter. That process was really traumatizing. The way that I would be able to speak to my daughter was I would call home and my grandmother would pretend that I was someone else on the phone. So then my daughter would, "Hi, Uncle, how you doing? I miss you, I love you." And I wouldn't say a word. It was hard. It was hard to go back to the dorm full of women and not be able to cry and have a release or have someone to talk to. And luckily, through FPP, I had made friends with women. I built healthy relationships. FPP allowed me to bridge the communication gaps with my attorney and my DHS worker. They provided a supervised visit so then I could start seeing my daughter. They allowed me to make amends for my wrongdoings and work through my traumas.
Hi folks, I'm Karen James with Prison Pipeline. KBOO's Spring Membership Drive has just begun, and I'm one of 300 volunteers who continue to produce programming during this past challenging year. Prison Pipeline hosts brought you news of prison evacuations during the wildfires and how COVID impacts adults in custody. Right now, you're learning about legislation that will impact incarcerated women and their children. Please show your appreciation for Prison Pipeline by supporting KBOO's Membership Drive today. Just go to kboo.fm/give to become a monthly sustaining member. And from all of us at Prison Pipeline, thank you for listening and thank you for giving.
We're going to transition now to hearing from Representative Williams, and she will be joined by Crystal Magana.
I am Representative Anna Williams. I represent Oregon's House District 52, which is all of Hood River County, Clackamas County, around Mount Hood, and the rural sort of eastern part of Multnomah County. I'm here to briefly introduce House Bill 2825, which actually arose out of some conversations called the Her Story Oregon Survey, which happened in Coffee Creek in 2019. And what they found in that survey was that 30% of the women who were incarcerated were there because they had experienced domestic or sexual violence as part of the reason why they committed the crime. 65% of the women reporting at the time of arrest reported that they were experiencing abuse in their relationship. And I used to work in that field, fighting against domestic and sexual violence and trying to help people get to safety. So this bill will require courts to consider domestic or sexual violence at the time of sentencing and would give them the opportunity to provide a lesser sentence if the crime was committed because you were being coerced by an abusive partner or being threatened, not necessarily directly in the moment of the crime, but over the course of your relationship, if they had put you in a place you felt like you had to commit this crime to keep yourself safe, keep your kids safe, keep a family member safe, something like that. So it also will allow people to petition for a reduced sentence after they're incarcerated. Sometimes we get a little bit of distance from those relationships and can see them through sort of a new lens. And so there's no time limit on when someone can ask for the judge to relook at their case and provide some additional context around having been the victim of abuse at the time of the crime, and they would get assigned a public defender at that time to help them navigate that process. So that's the bill, and I'm excited to hear from Crystal and listen to her voice.
Thank you, Representative Williams. This bill is very close to my heart, as all of these things are. I am a mother. I'm a mother of a 22-year-old girl. My daughter was not even 2 years old when I began my incarceration of 16 and a half years inside both county jail and then directly to Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. I was a kid myself. This bill, had it been around when my crime had happened, things could look a lot differently. And the reason why I say that is when I was 14 years old, I was forced into prostitution by the man who was also the father of my daughter. I got pregnant and gave birth at the age of 17. I was a kid myself, bouncing around from hotel room to hotel room and praying every day that I was gonna breathe another breath in my life. When my crime occurred, the justice system wasn't afforded the opportunity to take into consideration that I was living in domestic violence. I was forced into prostitution. I was a young girl who was living on the streets. I had battered women syndrome. There was no laws in place for those things. So when my judge came time to sentence me, even after speaking with the district's attorneys that were assigned in my case and my attorneys, she said that she had no choice other than to send me to prison for 16 and a half years. When I arrived at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, because of the length of my time, because it was under Measure 11, because I had no drug or alcohol addictions, there were no opportunities for me to seek out or gain any help for the reason that brought me to prison. There are no classes or programs available for a woman like myself to deal with and process those types of traumas. I was left on my own. Because of the length of my sentence, the DHS system decided that my daughter would be better off not knowing me. They immediately placed a no contact order in place. And every day I wrote letters and sent them to her DHS worker anyways, because once you're a mother, you're always a mother, and you love your kids and you want to be there for them. And my worst fear, knowing that my daughter had entered the DHS system, was something like this was going to happen to her. The Family Preservation Project is an amazing program. And if it was funded and supported the way that it needs to be, more mothers like myself who are serving longer sentences would be able to obtain that ability to be able to be there for their kids. But at the time of my incarceration, that wasn't available until I became minimum custody, which is 4 years or less. Once I went to minimum, I found out about the Family Preservation Project. I reached out to Ms. Kat. She brought me in. She asked me what had been going on. I told her I was scared. I didn't know how to be a mom. I hadn't been there for my daughter, but she was old enough that she went to her judge and said, I want to know who my mom is. I want to see her. And Ms. Cass said, we will do whatever we can to support that process and help you figure that out. So that was done with support of letter writing. That was done with support of phone calls where they were sitting with me to help encourage me and support me in how to respond to my daughter's questions and her anger and her hurt. That also included, as it got closer for me to be released, where was I going to be sent to from the prison system? Where was I going to live? That included the Family Preservation Project bringing in programs and supporting other programs like Red Lodge and the Oregon Women in Trades Program and all kinds of other things to give us moms the understanding and the encouragement that we could make outside of the prison walls. And there are these opportunities for us to be able to support ourselves, and that prison isn't the end all for us. But a lot of women have never learned how to gain their voice back because there isn't a support system that's readily available for them behind the prison walls. But if a bill like this, House Bill 2825, number one, was passed,
then women wouldn't be going to prison for 17 years of their life. They would be getting help. The courts would see there's a problem. They would be maybe resourcing them out to folks and groups that could help them deal with the trauma, deal with the domestic violence, help them get help to heal and to be there for their kids if they do have children. Most women that are incarcerated are a mother. They do have kids. If this bill were passed, then women wouldn't be sitting in prison with broken relationships with their families. And more women would have a better opportunity at living a healthy life free from trauma, which then creates this cycle through that abuse of ending up in prison. Today, I have been out of prison for 4.5 years. Like I said, I'm a mother to a 22-year-old young woman. And we are still in a continuous process of healing our relationship. I'm a proud iron worker. I'm part of my union, Local 29. I do whatever I can to advocate on behalf of the Family Preservation Project and to encourage women to get help, to seek help, to gain back authority over their life on whatever level that means. But most of all, I am 1,000 times supportive of the Family Preservation Project, because they are the only holistic program that incorporates empathy as its number one goal.
The next bill, which is going to be explained by Representative Prusak, then we're going to hear from Alicia Roach, Lynetta Garner.
I'm honored to have been invited to be a part of this with all you amazing people. My name is Rachel Prusak. I am the state representative for House District 37, which represents parts of Clackamas County and Washington County. And I am a family nurse practitioner. So in my day-to-day, I care for families. And I think many of you on here know that in 2017, Oregon passed the Bill of Rights of Children of Incarcerated Parents statute. And these rights laid out in statute are meant to guide our policy, procedures, and decisions concerning children of incarcerated people, including the right to be considered when decisions are made about the child's parent. Additionally, the children of incarcerated parents have the right to be cared for in the absence of the child's parent in a way that prioritizes the child's physical, mental, and emotional needs. And I think that the bill that I'm introducing, the Mom and Baby Preservation Project, seeking safe outcomes for incarcerated moms and their children, is an extension of that original bill, because pregnant mothers need prenatal education, resources, and nutritional support. And what this bill, House Bill 3266, Mom and Baby Preservation Project, will do is instruct the Department of Corrections to provide trauma-informed, wraparound pre- and postpartum services to mothers incarcerated at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. And rather than me go on and on about what we're not doing well and what we need to do well, I think it would be best use of our time to hear from the women who were in Coffee Creek, and if this bill had been passed, how it would have changed their pregnancy and birth.
So Lynetta, can you just say a little bit about yourself and talk about your story?
So I am a mother who had a baby while incarcerated in 2009. I pretty much did my whole pregnancy there. I've been out since 2014. Let me see a little bit about myself. I currently work for a mental health and drug and alcohol facility, which was one of my passions. As far as my pregnancy in prison, again, I did my whole time in prison. I found out I was pregnant within the prison, had my baby in the prison. It all goes back to, yes, there was a big lack of care for pregnant mothers there. We didn't get the support that we needed, whether it be from other family members because it was hard for them to get up to the facility, or just being within the Department of Corrections. There wasn't really too many people to turn to as far as our care within the facility or our pregnancy or what we needed. My whole experience of giving birth, it wasn't the greatest. You go out shackled, you come in shackled, you're shackled to the bed, you get less than 24 hours with your baby. That was a big thing. And then when you come back to the prison, it's, oh, what can we do for you? Put you on medication. And that wasn't what I was looking for. I was looking for some type of other support. I needed support as far as mentally, emotionally, and I wasn't getting that from the prison. It was, let's medicate you and sedate you, and then we don't have to deal with it. That was a really big thing for me, was that wasn't what I needed. I needed something else. I wanted I wanted to be with my baby. Like, I wanted more than that 15 hours that I got, and we didn't get that. We didn't get that. We got medication. We got put in the medical or asked to do psych evaluations by people, and that wasn't what we needed.
And Alicia's the mom of 5 boys and a practicing doula, which I think she will tell you about. Alicia.
I'm a practicing doula in my community. I work with African-American mothers and families, and I'm an alumni from FPP. So like Lynetta, I had my son in 2009. I got arrested April of 2008, found out I was pregnant that weekend, so like 3 days. Shortly after I found out I was pregnant, I was given the opportunity to stay in county until I delivered my son. I went with that option because I'm from Portland, I'm familiar with the hospital, so I knew somewhat of where I was going, all while in the hospital. So I left the hospital. Everyone told me, they're like, oh, you're not in labor, this is just Braxton Hicks. I'm like, I just had a baby, I know what that feels like. So all the male officers, male medical staff kept on telling me, no, you're not in labor, you're not in labor. And until the sergeant came down and patted me down to go out, she's like, oh yeah, we need to get Alicia to the hospital. She's in labor. I got to the hospital, I was 7 centimeters with my son. My bag was bulging out and I had him within 2 hours of being there. Prenatal care was not the same at all. I don't even recall the number of prenatal visits I had. I did not have a group B strep test. I did not have a glucose test. And of course, being an African-American mother, we're at higher risk for different things like that. I had one ultrasound. The tech told me there was debris in my amniotic fluid, and still, I wonder 12 years later what that debris was. So once I got back, I had my son on the 13th. I got back to the county jail on the 14th. They did a strip search, did the whole welcome in to jail stuff. And it's like when I was in the hospital, everybody told me that I was doing everything wrong. I didn't know how to breastfeed my son. I didn't know how to hold him right. He wasn't sleeping right. So everything was my fault because I was in prison, but I support the bill, and my business name came from my experience, Birthing with Dignity, and I'm all for the bill, and I'm excited about the work from the bill.
So next, we're going to hear from Senator Lou Frederick.
I'm Lou Frederick. I'm a state senator from District 22, that's North and Northeast Portland. We have been spending a great deal of our time trying to figure out how to punish people, not figuring out how we can actually bring people back into their communities in a very effective manner. The Senate bill that I'm involved with right now is Senate Bill 571. It is an attempt to try to reestablish a system where people are able to begin the process of reintroducing themselves into the community. And that's a very simple thing. It's allowing people who have been convicted of a felony to actually vote, to have their voter registration and vote in elections when they're incarcerated. This is a simple concept. It is acknowledging their rights and also acknowledging that they, in fact, are going to be part of the community coming in, and they will be doing things for the community as well, and that they want to, they're concerned about what's happening outside of the incarceration facility, that they are, in fact, ready to step forward and make some decisions and understand those decisions. We're basically saying we expect you to be acting as adults in our community, in our society, and this is the idea of this particular bill. So Senate Bill 571 is to try to get folks involved in their communities, involved in the politics. And we have seen clearly over the last few years how important it is to actually get involved and not just wait for someone else to make decisions. So that's what this bill is about. I hope you will take a look at it and support it by telling your legislators that you support it and telling other people about how you support it and how important it is.
Up next, we have Senator Gorsuch, who's going to introduce a bill. And then we are going to have Ashley Doherty, Vanessa Sherrod talk about that.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. And thank you for allowing me to be part of this really great conversation. I'm State Senator Chris Gorsuch. So I am from the urban sections of East County, including Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview. My bill is Senate Bill 720, and it is designed to establish what is being referred to as the Family Preservation Project. It's a pilot program that I hope to see expanded after the initial work on it. If it's approved by the legislature, it will ask the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission to collaborate with the Department of Corrections in establishing this program. And they will actually not be the ones that will be operating the program. It'll actually be the YWCA of Greater Portland. So here's a few of the goals that are hoped for in all of this. One is to provide services that increase protective factors within families, create self-efficacy in parents, and lead to successful parenting upon reentry. We also hope that it will help reduce the trauma that's experienced by children of folks who are incarcerated, and also that it will improve social, emotional, and educational outcomes. And if I could just say too that the previous stories about pregnancy and delivering babies, we absolutely have to change that as well. So I'm hoping that these are all first steps in recognizing the humanity of the women that are incarcerated and the need to treat them like the citizens that they are. So thank you.
So we're gonna hear from Ashley Doherty. And Ashley is an advocate for incarcerated mothers with special expertise in navigating the child welfare system. Her future plans include finishing a master's in social work and work in the field of youth mental health.
I'm Ashley Doherty. I'm an alumna of the Family Preservation Project. I served time at Coffee Creek between 2011 and February of 2015. I was involved with the Family Preservation Project for the last 3 years of my sentence. So in February of 2011, I was incarcerated for drunk driving accident that I was at fault for. I knew I had to take accountability for my actions, and going to prison was the result. I signed a plea bargain for 60 months, and while I knew that meant prison for me, I did not realize the gravity that it would mean for my parental rights. My daughter was at prime adoption age, according to DHS, and I was going to be away for 4 years. DHS was pushing to terminate my rights and repeatedly telling me that it was what was best for my daughter to just sign away my rights. Now, I was pretty darn broken at that time and in a really low place. I didn't know what to do or think, although I knew I didn't want to give up without a fight. I also had no knowledge of how these huge systems were at play, and I had no idea how to navigate them, especially from behind the bars. That's when the Family Preservation Project, or FPP, came into my life. The amazing women in this program helped me through my darkest times. At the lowest point in my life, FPP stood by me emotionally, physically, and mentally, allowing me to feel my feelings and empowering me to trust and love myself again. It gave me hope and lifted me up enough so that I could start to work on moving myself forward from what got me stuck in the first place. They helped me push forward and not giving up on myself or my role as Sophia's mother. Within 6 months of working with the Family Preservation Project, DHS went from wanting to terminate my rights to agreeing to a guardianship with family. This is the biggest, most tangible thing that FPP has done for me, and it's completely life-changing. I truly believe that if it wasn't for FPP, that this chapter of my life would be different. I might have very well lost my parental rights. But that was also just the start, because what FPP did for me was so much more. My daughter and I were able to work through the things that had gotten us into this broken spot. We were able to work on a bond that my alcoholism and incarceration tried to break for us. Throughout the rest of the time that I was incarcerated, FPP worked with me and my family to help us work on healing and repairing some of the harm that had been done, because there was definitely harm. I was able to bond, learn, and grow with my child behind those walls in a supportive and healthy atmosphere because of FPP. I've now been out 6 years. I haven't returned to prison. I haven't picked up alcohol. I have completed a couple degrees and will be working toward my master's next. I have an incredibly special relationship with my daughter, who's now 12 and doing advocacy herself.
Thank you, Ashley. And now we're gonna hear from Vanessa on the same bill.
My name is Vanessa Sherrod. I served 38 months at CCF from June 2016 to December 19. I have 3 children who were 12, 10, and 7 when I went away. And I continuously participate in alumni for the Family Preservation Project. Now I want to share a little bit of my perspective about repairing harm using the FPP model and a glimpse into what it looks like. FPP doesn't only focus on just the moms. It's a humane, holistic approach to focus on the families and communities that surround them. FEP was also the only program that invested consistently 3 out of 4 years that I served at TCCF. Some examples of what repair looked like for me: my kids, being able to show up for them during a time where they were confused, hurt, without their mother, and to let them know that they matter, that my love doesn't leave just because I did, and to show them I was going to use my resources and skills as their parent to advocate for what I could to get their needs met. With my family, having that space and support to find ways to take care of some of the responsibilities they faced as a caregiver, or find resources to even help them financially, mentally, or even give them guidance for things they had never dealt with before. Also allowing them the space to vent and to have the hard conversations, all the while giving them the validation they needed. Community, reaching out and building a village consistently with my kids' schools, my college, counselors, probation officers, all to create a plan for success so that when I reached out when I got home, they knew who I was and what the common goal was to rebuild for something new. And last but not least, FPP gave me the space to repair the harm in myself. They listened to what mattered most to me without judgment, but with empowerment. I've been out over a year, and I've continued to serve the community through advocacy and as a mentor. It's a must to keep FPP alive and support women, families, and the communities as a whole.
You have been listening to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs. Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.